Couple of numbers for you this morning. So yesterday evening, the Senate unveiled its health care bill. Senate Democrats will take this to the floor, and it had about 2,074 pages, cost about $849 billion. That's less than $1 billion per page by my math. But let's talk about the principles in this bill and what it's actually going to mean. First of all, Senator Christopher Dodd of Connecticut was pretty happy about how things turned out.
I'm particularly proud of the fact that this legislation includes a very strong public option, investments in preventive care, added protections for our seniors that the leaders talked about, and a program to provide long-term services and support for those who are disabled.
But it's an uphill battle from here. Harry Reid, the majority leader in the Senate, officially files the bill today. And under Senate rules, there could be a test vote to indicate how many votes Harry Reid actually has for passage of this bill. And he needs 60, remember, as early as Saturday. Joining us now is Todd Zwillick, of course, Takeaway Washington correspondent, who is with us there at the top of the hour talking about the all-nighters ahead of the Democrats and others in the Senate. Also, Paul Starr, professor of sociology and public policy at Princeton University. He was a senior healthcare policy advisor in the Clinton White House. He's the author of The Social Transformation of American Medicine. Professor Starr, good morning.
Good to be with you.
So I want this conversation to go as efficiently as possible, because there's a lot of sort of consumer-related principles that I think people would love to know where they stand in this bill. And, of course, we do have to talk politics. But first of all, Barack Obama campaigned on a mandate to make insurance mandatory for all consumers, thereby reducing the number of uninsured in America. Where's the mandate, Todd Zwillick, in this bill? How does it stand?
Well, the mandate, Democrats call this shared responsibility, John. It's not called a mandate. Mandate's a bad word. Okay, the rest of us call it a mandate. The mandate is really on individuals, you and me. Basically, everybody has to get insurance. Now, if you have a lower income, if you're poor, they're expanding Medicaid. More people will have access to the Medicaid health insurance program for the poor. Middle-income people will have to get insurance, but the idea here is to try to create lower-cost insurance options, require everybody to have insurance, but then all of us, the taxpayers, are paying for cost sharing and for subsidies, really tax credits and cash for people, so that they can buy insurance. This bill does not have, like the House, let me put it this way, the House had a mandate on employers. Many of them must provide insurance. This bill doesn't really have a mandate. It doesn't say employers must provide coverage. However, it does say that employers that can afford to provide coverage but don't will have to pay part of the cost into the government. It's really to prevent sort of free riders. It's to prevent employers who can afford it from sort of riding off the system and not providing coverage.
Well, that's an interesting distinction between the House and the Senate. Paul Starr, does that represent this shared responsibility business? Does that represent a significant change in your view?
No, I don't think there's a significant change here. I do think this is one of the hardest things to explain to the public, because why is it that people would be required to buy insurance? And the problem is this. If you offer insurance without any exclusions, without any pre-existing condition exclusions, and without any difference in price according to health, then the rational thing for many people to do would be not to buy insurance until they got sick, because they could always get it under a program like this.
That's an interesting point.
And the whole thing would collapse. Unless you bring everybody in, unless you have healthy people paying for insurance, there isn't enough money in the insurance fund to pay for the sick.
And that, of course, is the single-payer argument, which, of course, neither the House nor the Senate really has in either bill. So, Todd, where's this $849 billion going to be spent?
Well, John, read my lips. There are some new taxes in here. First of all, they're getting some of the money by some cuts to Medicare. Now, that's not cuts to Medicare benefits. Really, they're taking some money out of a private insurance Medicare program called Medicare Advantage that Democrats have hated for years and Republicans love. So, since the Democrats are in control, they're taking $170 billion or so out of that. They are raising taxes. They're raising the payroll tax that people pay on their payrolls now. Medicare tax, if you make over $200,000 for an individual or $250,000 for a couple, your Medicare payroll tax is going to go up. They're raising taxes on the so-called, we've been talking about the Cadillac health plans, the high-end health plans. There's going to be an excise tax on some of the largest health insurance plans. That raises money, and it also sort of discourages people from having over-insurance, which is expensive. And John, the last thing, which is very interesting, you know that You know that facelift you've been trying to get, that one you've been waiting for?
Right, Tom, thanks for ringing that up.
5% tax on elective cosmetic
surgery.
That's
interesting.
This was originally a finance proposal that got dropped early in the process, but, you know, Harry Reid needs to raise money for this bill. So a 5% tax on your elective cosmetic surgeries, that's supposed to raise $6 billion, will be collected at the point of service by your cosmetic surgeon.
All right, so that's how this is going to be financed. Paul Starr, $849 billion over 10 years. Do you think that's a significant investment in our healthcare system, which is a sixth of the U.S. economy?
Of course it's a significant investment. That is meant to cover the subsidies to enable low-income, low-middle-income people to afford insurance that's going to be offered now through this whole new system, the system of insurance exchanges. And I think that's really going to be the big, long-term, significant change here, the creation of these insurance exchanges that will dramatically, I think, give people better value for money on insurance, will cut a lot of the administrative waste out of the system, enable people who have to buy insurance individually or in a very small business to get a much better deal than they do now.
All right, so let's talk politics then. Chris Dodd says there's a public option in there, but some Republicans aren't so happy with this bill. Here's Senator Orrin Hatch.
We don't want just something through the Senate. It ought to be a bill of some magnitude and decency, rather than just a partisan hack bill, which is what it's been so far.
Are those code words, partisan hack bill or magnitude and decency, Todd Zwillick?
Yeah, those are code words for this debate is going to go a lot slower than Chris Dodd and Harry Reid want it to. And that's the nature of the Senate. Republicans have every incentive politically and in a policy vein to slow this down. John, the public option is in there. Democrats are all excited about it. But the bottom line is it's not staying in there.
It's not staying.
It's not staying. Not the public option that's in there now. Right now they have the national public option where states can opt out if they pass a law saying we want to opt out. There right now are not 60 votes for that proposal to stay in. And Harry Reid, over the next several weeks, is going to need 60 votes to keep it in. And Democratic leadership is acknowledging that they basically don't have it. So that's going to change on the floor. Now,
horse trading, because I got to go to Paul Starr before we end. Paul Starr, give me a sense. Should American consumers and voters be excited about this plan, whatever form it ends up in?
Yes, I think they should be. I think millions of people who don't have insurance should be excited, but many others who do have insurance, whose insurance really turns out to be lousy when they get sick, they should be excited because there's going to be much better protection of the standards of insurance. And I think that is going to be crucial for many people who don't realize they have an interest in this.
Right. And it's going to take weeks and weeks. And, of course, there's a whole other side to this, that the government intervention is actually the wrong thing to do. The debate continues. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Thanks so much. Paul Starr, professor of sociology and public policy at Princeton University. And at 15... 15-